You're listening to the Big Guy Fantasy Sports Podcast Network. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Hello and welcome to episode 124 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Dots Pretzels. I am Nathan Dock, and you can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dock. And I'm joined today by the Bronn to my Tyrion Lannister, Van Lee. What's up, man?
Ooh, I like being referred to as Bronn. I'm much more handsome, though. I do have to admit that.
Absolutely. You're nothing if not modest as well. Which
exactly. Which is not unlike Bronn himself. Sure, sure. Yeah, yes. Happy to be here. Glad for the Game of Thrones reference. I just had a piece of cheese for dinner prior to recording, so I couldn't be happier, to be honest.
How's that cape treating you?
I know capes are great. I always wear capes to and from. We could insert another Seinfeld reference here if we wanted, because Larry David was spotted wearing the cape in that show.
I did not see that one, but I want to.
Oh, it's a good. He plays George Costanza's dad's friend, and Jerry sees George's dad on the street talking to a man in a cape, and it becomes the whole to do, as it should become a whole to do if you see someone speaking to a man in a cape.
Do you pull off capers in your cape?
I like to eat capers, that's for sure.
That was the next place I was going with it. Have you ever had a caper?
Like a physical caper, like a
the food,
an adventure. Oh no, I've eaten plenty of capers. Yes, they're quite good.
A little salty for my taste, but anyway, we should probably bring on the Lord Varys.
No, we're good.
The Lord Varys to my Tyrion Lannister, Ron Rigney.
Van, have you ever participated in a good caper?
I feel like I have, but I couldn't put a name to it. I think you only know you're in the caper when you're done with the caper.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, good to be here, guys. I'm going to do my best to make sure that this podcast does not resemble a giant crap in the street. So
nobody gets that, but that's what makes it the best.
That's what makes it the Nasty Cast.
Indeed. on today's show, we will talk about crapping. We will also talk about the Cubs because of players. We will talk about the Yankees because they're good. We will talk about the A's because they're bad. We'll talk about pitchers and whether they're good or bad. We'll talk about streaming pitchers that are often bad but could be good. We'll talk about closers. We'll talk about prospects, specifically Mike Soroka, Carson Kelly, Sixto Sanchez, and Brandon Rogers. It's going to be more fun than a barrel of monkeys. So, before we get too far, I suppose we could ask if you have ever participated in a caper yourself. You can reach out to us on Twitter at NastyCastBGFS, or give us your opinion of the caper or the food. I've only actually put it in one thing, and it was like this weird salad, and it was way too many capers. That's pretty much all I could taste.
Isn't it really like a common thing in like Greek salads? Like, isn't it like with like feta and...
Yeah, you have to have enough flavors that'll balance it out. You can't just throw a caper in like a Caesar salad because it will be overwhelmingly salty. So if you have, feta is a great actual component to go along with that because it'll kind of dull the saltiness of it all.
Well, and also,
much like Nate's saltiness.
Oh, I'm very salty today, that's for sure. Everybody on all of my teams has hit the disabled list. Everybody else who's actually playing sucks. It's a miserable time of year, but let's see. You can complain about your fantasy teams also to Van at Manly Van Lee on Twitter, or to Ron at The Real Maday, M-A-D-A-Y. And go to BigGuyFantasySports.com, check out all our written work, and find links to the BJ Baseball Podcast and the Consistency Cast. And Bob Lung's 2017 Fantasy Football Consistency Guide is, I think, coming out this weekend. So keep your eye out for that. Perhaps we will have him on the show next week to discuss the goodness that is the Consistency Cast.
Does Bob, are either of you fans of Arrested Development or listeners out there?
I can hear the listeners out there saying yes. However, I've never really seen the show.
Yeah, well, there's a character in there named Bob Loblaw. He's a lawyer.
I've heard all about him and his
Bob blah, blah, blog.
Yeah.
Scott. Yeah. Bob blah, 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 blog. Well, every time I see Bob Lung, that's what I think of without fail. Bob blah, blah's law blog.
There's a lot of, and with the last name Lung, too, there's a lot of fun that could be had. We'll have to come up with some stuff to rib him with when he comes on the show.
More like Bob Dung. really Crapping showed him. Street.
Yeah. And also the listeners, I can hear them slowly making their way towards their laptops and mobile devices as they're rating us on iTunes with 5 stars and saying, just showering us with praise because they want to get free Dots pretzels. And if for those of you who are out there not doing that right now, we are prepared to call your spouse and tell him or her to overcook the asparagus at your next dinner. So definitely.
Maybe throw in too many capers.
Way too many capers. It's going to be highly unpleasant.
And if they threw in capers, that could be considered a caper involving capers. A caper
in and caper. Of itself, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Which, by the way, overcooking the asparagus is way worse than what we could do to any animal that we've mentioned.
I think so. Gets all stringy.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yes, not good. Boy, a lot of vegetable talk in the early going here on this week's NastyCast. But somebody who has definitely not been a vegetable since moving into the leadoff role is Anthony Rizzo. Hey, out in Chicago. Rizzo! He's close to qualifying at second base in most fantasy leagues as well. Ben, what are your thoughts on that?
It's pretty crazy. Now, okay, I'm going to paint a picture for you. Imagine a bird cage. Round bird cage, because we all know that birds don't like round cages. They like square cages. Well, that was Anthony Rizzo in the past in a round bird cage. He's busted out of that cage. He's made corners in it. He's made it to where he's also going to have second base eligibility soon, very soon in your league, which is very freeing in and of himself. So now he can display his plumage. He can show how good he is with that extra positional versatility. I think it's excellent for the game.
Yeah, he has too much plumage just for one position to hold him down. So, this would surprise me more if it was any manager other than Joe Maddon. But this is just a case of Joe Maddon being Joe Maddon. This is what he does. So, it's awesome if you own him. I own him. Actually, I was trying to shop him around in one league where I took over a team a couple weeks ago, and I have my offense is really solid, but my pitching is terrible. But the thing is, I can now, once he gets that eligibility, I can have Goldschmidt at first, Rizzo at second. And I can put Will Myers in the outfield, so that's a pretty nice little trifecta there for my lineup in that league. But yeah, it's great. It's awesome if you own him that you can put him there.
Do you think do you guys think that Rizzo will stick at the leadoff role, or do you think and what's his value there compared to where it was before? Because he I wrote him up just last night. Since batting leadoff, 7 games batting leadoff, he's got 4 home runs. He's hitting .375 with 10 RBI.
Because of how good he's been there, I don't think Madden's going to move him for a while. And he's always been a good on-base guy, so there's some logic to it. I think if you're valuing him in fantasy, the gain of having him second base eligible is going to outweigh any fall off and maybe RBI that he could basically see. But he's going to score some runs. And you know what? He's gotten back to running this year a little more. I don't have his numbers in front of me, but I know he's stolen more bases than he did at this point in the last couple of years. Well, last year for sure. And actually, Nate, you asked me in the preseason how many bases I thought he could steal, and I said he could get to 9 at least, and I think he'll eclipse that pretty easily.
I'd be interested to see what that position, how it performed before he was put in the leadoff spot, how the guys that played there before, what the average was in the on-base and all that. That'd be interesting to see what the difference is.
Well, it was pretty crappy with Kyle Schwarber because he was there for the majority of the season.
All right.
So obviously it's been a big step down from Dexter Fowler.
Yeah, that is for sure. He has 5 stolen bases this far in the season. So, I mean, it's arguable he could steal 12 to 13 at this pace. So that could happen. And he has the home runs. Listen, I know everyone thinks that Rizzo's kind of struggling because the batting average isn't quite there. He's been really good this season, and he's going to be really good. His BABIP's down a bit, so there's room for improvement for sure. But he's still really good.
Yeah, more walks and strikeouts. The power has really come around. The average is going to continue to trend upwards. Especially like I wrote up on Fantastics, like if you can find somebody who is sort of under the radar, under a rock, one of those type of things, you know, if they're not paying attention to the world of baseball and they don't realize that Anthony Rizzo has 9 games played at second base, supposedly, according to eligibility, and you need a second baseman, now is the last chance to go out and get him, because Anthony Rizzo as a second baseman is incredible. Especially in an OBP league. But
yeah. And, you know, on that same note, the Braves have come out and said that Freddie Freeman might play a little bit at third base. So we've got 2 of the top 3 first basemen in the game. learning some extra eligibility here, and that's only going to help their value.
Absolutely.
I read a thing today that threw the idea out there, and I don't know how much traction there is to this, that the Yankees might actually kick the tires on Matt Adams if they're interested in dealing him.
Mm.
I think that's kind of an interesting pairing with him at Yankee Stadium.
Could be a fit, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the
makes sense.
Braves would get rid of Matt Adams if they.
I don't think they would either. I think it'd take a lot more than what the Yankees think it would for them to get that to happen.
Yankees always do that, though. They're like, oh, we'll just give you a F-level prospect and $10, and you'll just give us your prospects. It's fine.
or they throw money at everything, which works.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been bitching on Twitter from time to time about Rizzo getting second base eligibility just because of the shift, but apparently he is switching gloves when he shifts all the way over towards second, which somehow legitimizes it.
He's using an infielder's glove, so a much smaller size.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So I don't know. At least he's doing that, I guess. But still, it's kind of stupid since he's not really playing second. Anyway, we can move on. Another quick though.
Does he throw left or does he throw? Yeah, he throws left.
Yeah.
That's bizarre. You never see anyone on the other side of first base as a left-hander ever. So that's interesting that he would that they're still even doing that, considering that. Hmm.
It's tough being a lefty. I was a left-handed second baseman in softball the other year. Didn't work out very well.
No.
but it would have been even worse if I had thrown with my right hand. Whew. Matt Chapman, anyway, over to Oakland. He has been called up by the A's after they DFA'd Trevor Plouffe. So, Ron, what do you think about Matt Chapman?
Power bat, gold glove defense from everything I've seen and heard. I think that, you know, when we talk about these prospects, I think one of the things that gives them a little bit longer of a lead is if they can play solid defense and prevent some runs, I think they'll get more of a shot. He's forcing Ryan Healy to go to DH. He actually is out with a knee infection, though, that they're trying to get cleared up. So that's a little strange. But the K rate's high, but Oakland strikes out a ton anyway, so he fits right into that lineup. He's got 16 homers in AAA. I think it's fine. I don't think that at this point in a lot of yearly leagues you're going to have to give up much to get him of your fab. So if he's out there, I think he's worth a shot to give you a little power boost at this point of year.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. He's also on the prestigious Dynasty League team that is mine. It was a really weird way to say that. But anyway, he's another one of these big prospects that's coming up in that regard. So I'm personally excited for it. And literally the line I wrote down for Matt Chapman is just the line you should write down for every Oakland A's player, which is he has some power, he walks a lot, but he needs to cut down on the strikeouts. And that's the truth of the matter. I think my favorite part about all of this is the DFA Trevor Plouffe and the Rays are like, oh, man, we will so take that. Give us some Trevor Plouffe right now.
That's what they always do. I think the one before that was Peter Borges was the guy that they added to. So the other thing too, I looked at the A's offense. It seems like to me they have a lot of trade chips on offense too. If they want to, if they're going to sell some pieces or they want to try to deal for a pitcher.
The A's, oh yeah, they're going to be selling everything that isn't nailed down. And I mean,
you got Yonder Alonso, you got Chris Davis, you got Ryan Healy, you've got Chapman coming up, you got Jed Lowry. I mean, there's a lot of things on there that could be really attractive to some teams around a deadline.
Yeah, Yonder Alonso apparently wants to stay in Oakland, but I can't imagine that's true. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody ever actually wants to stay in Oakland and sign an extension. But if maybe there's, I mean, we saw a pretty terrible market for first baseman last year that hit for power. So, you know, maybe he would rather just stick with what he knows, you know, where he knows he's wanted than test the market.
And the way he's turned it around, too, I don't know if I'd want to leave there either compared to what he did when he was in San Diego.
Yeah, and then, you know, thinking about their bullpen too, we actually don't have them on the closer report this week, but I think that it's definitely a bullpen worth speculating over because, you know, especially with the return of Sean Doolittle, you know, Casilla, he could be on the move for anything, you know. he could be in Washington by the end of the week as far as I'm concerned. So like if I'm just strapped and like in a deep league trying to find holds and you know, handcuffs, then I'd be looking at Ryan Madsen and Sean Doolittle. But let's see, what do we have next on the old agenda? Oh yeah, Matt Chapman. Just to me, I don't, you know, he just seems like a mini Gallo, right? Like just a ton of strikeouts and walks and no batting average. So if you're into that kind of thing, if, especially if you're in an on-base league where the batting average isn't going to kill you, because he's hitting 214 right now. It's only 16 plate appearances, 259 in the minors this year. But, yeah, I would be surprised if he hits more than like 230, 240 because he just hits a ton of fly balls. And the brunt of that is taken off when you have really high walk rates in your if you're in an OBP league. So, you know, and people don't really care if you strike out 30% of the time. And there's so many of those guys that keep coming up. It's like every time you look up, it's another one of these 30 strikeout guys that just try to hit 30 home runs, you know, in a given year. So
that's the game we're in right now. It's all about the long ball and launch angle and all that business. So that kind of cracks me up. And then Chapman is another player that you can actually say his last name along with that Soundgarden song, Spoon Man, as well.
So it'd be like Chapstick Man.
It could be. Why not? He's what Burt's Bees. Maybe he could have sponsorship by that. Like soccer jerseys. You know, they have all the sponsors all over them. Maybe they start doing that in baseball and his is Burt's Bees.
Oh, man.
Matt Chapman Chapstick.
Mmm. Delicious. Tastes like strikeouts and walks.
Yeah. It's like pine tar scented.
It's in Oakland, so it'd be murder scented. Sorry, any listeners out in Oakland. We know you don't all murder each other, just a large percentage of you.
Maybe he could do like a marketing campaign with MC Hammer or something, since he's from Oakland. That'd be cool.
MC Hammer's from Oakland? That's true. Oh, yeah. I guess he was part of the West Coast rap battle, which, again, as someone from the West Coast, is part of my people as well.
As you guys know, I'm a bobblehead enthusiast, and one of my favorite ones that's on the top of my list to get is actually the A's did an MC Hammer bobblehead that is absolutely amazing. If you search it up after the show, it's ridiculous.
Wow, I didn't know. Yes. You were quite that into bobbleheads. I have one, by the way.
I like them.
This was just given to me for my birthday a couple months ago by my friend Brian. It's a Pokey Reese Pittsburgh Pirates bobblehead, and it's phenomenal. Yeah,
excellent.
You know, my buddy Tim, when he got married a couple years ago, as the groomsman gifts, he got us all bobbleheads of ourselves.
There's
awesome. Yeah, there's some like Etsy person, or, you know, who does this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they make the specialized bobbleheads and then ship them out, and it is startlingly similar to my actual dome.
I think I saw yours. You put it on there. Yeah, that was impressive.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy, actually. But, yeah, so I'm looking at myself right now. I got my small collection of bobbleheads. Of course, the Dynasty League champion from 2 years ago.
Mm,
so you get
sure.
a bobblehead for that. Nice. So, Queso Pelotas, as I named him.
I actually remember this. Wasn't this part of the previous iteration of the podcast? Like, you had some jokes about it. I don't know. I don't remember. I'm old and forgetful.
No, I don't remember it either. But, you know, that translates to cheese balls, so that just makes me happy.
Okay, nice, yeah.
Speaking of cheese balls, Gleyber Torres, he's going to miss the rest of the season undergoing Tommy John surgery. So, Van, how are you handling this situation as far as the dynasty stock of Gleyber Torres, and what do you think that the Yankees are going to do at third base now?
Well, his stock is just as high as ever. He's an infielder who is having Tommy John on his non-throwing arm. So I have zero problems with this injury, even less so than, you know, a thumb injury or wrist injury. I think this will be more than fine. He'll be back next year. We'll have zero problems from it. I mean, obviously things can happen, but I really don't expect this to affect him in any way going forward. So I still value him really, really highly as a top 10 prospect. So he's a buy candidate if you've got someone who's, you know, was expecting him to come up this year and help their team. Maybe you're out of it in a dynasty league. You can try and buy him. Whatever your situation is, I would still buy him. As far as the Yankees go, I don't know if you were just talking about this on the podcast or before, Ron, but you were saying Matt Adams is a choice that they might go after. He's obviously not going to play third base, but there are plenty of other options out there that they could see. I don't necessarily know if that market has really manifested itself yet. But it can be an interesting one because I think the Yankees are really going to be in it this year, much to my chagrin. So we'll see kind of how they play that up. But with Torres, unfortunately, he's not going to help the big league team this year, but he's still going to have a really good career ahead of him.
Yeah, and we mentioned earlier all the things that the A's have. I mean, Ryan Healy's a name, too, that who knows what the Yankees might do. But I think when you draft prospects, or especially in yearly leagues, if you're stashing the guys, I don't think you can really – count on them to give you a whole lot, because not everybody's going to come up and be Cody Bellinger. And so I think anything you were going to get from Torres this year was just going to be a bonus anyway. So yearly leagues, obviously no need to hang on to him. And then dynasty, kind of the same thing. I mean, you know, you want to get help. You play in dynasties because you want to get help from these guys. But overall, I don't think it's going to affect him at all. I feel like I'm in the minority that I think that he would have been up sooner rather than later. I don't think it would have just been a September call-up. I think he would have definitely been at third base. And I think it's more of just the Yankees wanting to, you know, they've got Aaron Judge up and they've got Severino pitching well and they've got Gary Sanchez. And I think it's more of kind of like the Yankees like to be that team. Hey, look at me. Look at the new shiny toys we got. And I think that that's more of it than anything. It's going to draw them that attention to bring him up and put him in that lineup with what Judge is doing and what those other guys are doing. So I think that kind of ruins their plans a little bit, because I think he would have been up in unseated Chase Headley for the third base spot.
Yeah, it's definitely a good opportunity to buy from somebody in Dynasty who is potentially leaning on him to come up and contribute this year and now is looking to trade him away for a now piece. Maybe we see, Van, you had mentioned Moustakas perhaps moving to the Yankees. He's a guy who is definitely going to be on the move somewhere before the trade deadline. I don't know, maybe Milwaukee decides to ship Travis Shaw, because why not? You know, cash in on the fact that he's been really good. You know, they've got a whole bunch of prospects coming up. Dyson Diaz, I know he's a shortstop, I believe, still. Maybe they can shift him over to third base. Plenty of time. It's not like they're competing anytime real soon. Although their farm system is definitely looking good. So, yeah, maybe a couple names we'll see out there. Neil Walker, moving over to the Mets. He's going to be down for about a month with a partial hammy tear. So, Ron, do you have any interest in the direct replacements there as far as their fantasy value goes? Jose Reyes, maybe you hit a couple dongs the other day, or Wilmer Flores?
I have none in Reyes, just for the fact that the 10 steals he has are nice, but he doesn't really impress me anywhere else. He's in a .196, so I'm gonna pass on him. Wilmer, I have a little bit of interest in because the average is a little bit better. There's a little bit of pop there, but the guy that I was looking at was Gavin Cecchini that they brought up from the minors. But the only thing is, you got to kind of see what he's going to do with the K rate. None of them have great on base percentages, but Cecchini and Flores have averages into 280s. In 7 at bats already, Cecchini struck out 3 times, so I'm hoping that goes down a little bit. But he's the guy that I'd look at out of all of them, probably first, and then I'd probably have to put Wilmer Flores at second. But Reyes, I want nothing to do with if I have. It's got to be a really deep league for me to look at Jose Reyes in any format.
How does Reyes still have a job is what I want to know. I mean, he's been that bad. There was at the beginning of the season, I think he was like 3 for 40 or something absurd like that. He's been so bad. And I mean, his line right now, he is walking a bit, but when you're hitting a .196, you know, your 270 OBP really isn't that impressive either. The 6 homers and 10 steals are nice, but he's basically killing your team in every other category. So I really don't have any interest in Reyes either. Flores is at least got some pop. So I've played him in DFS a couple of times and it's worked out. He's slugging .458, which is surprising, 169 isolated power. But Ron's right, he doesn't walk at all. So if it's an OBP league, probably not. If it's a batting average league, you could find some value in there. I think I can't say his name. Anyway, I think he could be pretty interesting. There's the two of them. Gavin is the Met. Guerin is the other one, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Where's Guerin play? I don't even remember.
I want to say Red Sox, but I don't know if he's moved on since then or not.
That's what I think it is. Too. It at least sounds used to be the Red Sox.
Yeah.
And also, Wilmer Flores sounds like the combination of a baseball player from 1889 and 1999. Like, they took the first half Wilmer and then the second half Flores and just mushed them together. And you've got a guy who doesn't walk but can hit for power.
I like to think that he's got like a floral aroma to him. Every time you walk by, he smells like flowers.
Like the catcher appreciates it every time he walks by to the plate. Sure.
Like you
see,
Guerin Cecchini is actually a Kansas City Royal now.
Oh boy, good.
But he was
good for ruining his career.
He did have 2 seasons in Boston, so we weren't completely wrong.
Sure.
The Cecchini show. I do like Wilmer Flores in deeper leagues. It's nice that you can move him all over the infield. And he definitely deserves more than 6 home runs so far this year. He is still hitting for average, but 36% hard contact rate, 43% fly balls, 40% pull rate. That should be netting him better than, let's see, was his, 9.5% home run for fly ball. Should be a lot higher than that. So I think if you need some power, I think that there's going to be more on the way from Flores too. So in deeper leagues, I would definitely be looking at Flores as a, at least in the short term, as an injury fill-in. But let's take a break here. We're going to do that after this next segment. Let's just do it now, and then we'll come back with our feature segment.
You're listening to the BGFS Network, where we keep fantasy real.
All right, we have returned on the nastiest of casts, and for our feature segment this week, we decided to sort of balance things out after talking about a lot of hitters just a few weeks ago. We're going to talk about a lot of pitchers now, and we're going to do the good old ERA minus FIP, which you can look for over on FanGraphs, and we're going to see if we are buying low on any of these guys that have a huge delta between their earned run average and their fielding independent pitching. So one thing, obviously, that all these guys are going to pretty much have in common is an elevated BABIP and a very low strand rate. That's where you get the differential between the ERA and the FIP. If everything is sort of normalized, then FIP tells you, what sort of level they should be pitching at, what ERA they should have earned. And so I actually need to call up this list again because a lot of it has switched since I pulled up these numbers. But Ron, I'm going to just toss this first name over to you because I believe at the top of this leaderboard with a 170 delta between ERA and FIP is Josh Tomlin. So we're going to kind of look at if we're going to buy low on any of these guys. So are you buying in on the Josh Tomlin at all?
I'm not. The 6 ERA, the 1.4 whip. When we look at guys that have these high numbers with the ERA and the whip, if it's a guy that I need to add, they at least have to strike people out. Tomlin's got 56 strikeouts in 75 innings, so that's not anything that's going to help me out. And I really think that at this point, when you look at his starts, his days are numbered in Cleveland. I really look for them to maybe go out and find another arm in a trade. I think he's almost overdue at this point from what he's been putting up. I don't know why, if they're just not able to get anything off the trade market or what, but I think his days are numbered. I don't think that he's a guy that's going to help me in any way, shape, or form. So no, I'm off the Josh Tomlin train.
I will back up that sentiment. No, thank you. He doesn't strike anyone out. Sure, he's got the ability not to walk anyone. In fact, his walks per nine are at 0.71. He's like if Brad Radke was also bad. That's what Josh Tomlin is. And so I just have no interest in it. Doesn't strike anyone out. At best, his ERA might be like 4.3. And I don't know. I feel like if he's going to be a guy you have to rely on, the best your fantasy team's going to do is like fourth place. And that's if you're really lucky.
Yeah, we are in easy agreement on the Josh Tomlin. Just not that exciting an option. So I don't have a whole heck of a lot more to add to that. One thing that I did want to point out now that I have this leaderboard up, we're not going to talk about all these guys. Obviously, we're going to get to a half dozen of those or so. But the number 10 right now is Chris Sale. He has a 0.89 ERA minus FIP. His ERA is 2.85, and his FIP is 1.96. My God, settle down, Chris Sale. That's ridiculous to have him be this good and still have that much of it. Like, he should be that much better.
Just he's insane. Carving up hitters like he carved up those jerseys last year.
Oh. Use that as motivation. You just hear his mentor saying that to him. Let's see, who's next on this list? Matt Moore, whose ERA minus FIP differential is 1.33, Van. What do you think about Matt Moore?
I'm going to give a tentative buy here. I think he's scary, but I also think he could eke out an ERA under 4 with at least decent strikeouts. He's always had stuff, just not control. And to be honest, if one year we kind of look up and Matt Moore suddenly has really good control, I could see him being maybe a Garrett Richards type pitcher, hopefully without all the injuries. So I think there's some potential here, but it's very tempered because he's burned a lot of people in the past. And again, he has such bad control that if he has a bad game, it's a very, very bad game.
I'm going to say no, and it's kind of I'm kind of you're kind of a tentative yes, I'm kind of a tentative no. at the end of the day, it seems like Matt Moore was a guy that came up through the Rays organization with these insane strikeout numbers, but he's really not a big strikeout guy. And for me, the walk rate's really too high. That 8.5 walk rate is a little high for me. The FIP is high that we're talking about, 4.49, 336 BABIP. I just see a lot that really kind of gives me pause. Plus, we know the Giants offense is not doing much, so he's not going to help in the wins category. I will say he is a super nice guy. I actually met him before, so that, you know, kind of
name drop.
Yeah, well, you know how we do down here.
Did you get his bobblehead?
No, but I do. Actually, do I? No, I don't have his. But I did get a signed baseball, though, so that's pretty cool. Nice. But, yeah, so I'm going to say no, but yeah, like I think it's a very valid point, though. He could be one of those guys in a year or two that all of a sudden is a really solid control pitcher. I think he has that kind of stuff.
You know what I want to do? Like, you brought up how you collect bobbleheads. I want to start collecting minor league baseball team caps because some of them are so cool. And also, it works really well for me because as a man who is rapidly balding, I need something to cover up the top of my head. And that seems like a stylish way to do it. But, man, there's some good ones out there.
It's funny you say that because I found out today that there is a team called the Hartford Yard Goats, and I think that's my favorite minor league team name right now.
Damn it.
That's
phenomenal.
I seriously was going to bring them up.
I feel kind of like I feel nothing now because I was going to be like, yeah, well, the minor league team where I was kind of born at is the Dirt Bags, like the long beach Dirt Bags, and that's nothing compared to the Yard Goats.
There's some great ones out there.
Yeah, there are some awesome ones.
I really want to get me a Montgomery Biscuits cap.
That's a good one.
Yeah, a biscuit just like smiling with a pat of butter in its mouth.
Yes.
That is
amazing. They sell those at the Trop when you go to Rays games. They actually have all their minor league gear there too.
That's a good idea.
Fantastic. Fantastic, even. It gets that kind of pedigree. Anyway.
I will second that, yeah, sure.
Perfect. Matt Moore, like we were talking about, who is number 6 on this quote-unquote leaderboard, I suppose, if you will. 582 FIP so far, 582 ERA, 449 FIP. He's been hitting waiver wires in a lot of leagues that I've been in, so you don't even have to buy low on him. You could just pick him up and keep him on your bench in a lot of leagues at this point.
Certain someone did in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League.
Was that you?
Yeah, I picked him up. I got him for nothing. I mean, $0 bid, so why not? Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, I was thinking for a second that you were the one that dropped him. Yeah, no, that makes more sense for you to pick him up. I mean, he's sort of switched his pitch mix this year. He's upped his cutter usage 12% this year. He's dropped his curveball and his fastball by 6% each, and he's seen his swinging strike rate drop to 8.6% as a result. And that cutter has been a negative pitch, according to Pitch Value, so far this year. So maybe he should just put that pitch back in his pocket and go back to the old Matt Moore, which was not great, but at least not this crappy. He's allowed a 465 weighted on base to lefties with a 47% hard contact rate to lefties this year. That is just staggering compared to his career rate of 321 WOBA against lefties. So clearly that cutter, I think, is just killing him right now, and he should go away from that a little bit. So that leads me to believe that he could be better if he switches that up over the course of the second half. And I would be, if I can do what I just said, like just pick him up like what you did, Van, and just, I don't know if you're going to start him or stash him on your, like if I could just stash him.
Oh, you've
nothing,
seen my team. You know where he's going.
Starting him, baby. Yeah, but I mean, if I have nothing to lose, if I can just stash him on the bench, I don't even have to worry about him destroying me like for the time being. Yeah, I'm all about buying him low. But I don't think I'm going to be trading for him.
This may be just because I live right in the middle of Cardinals country, but every time I hear his name, I think it was Matt Morris. Was that the old Cardinals pitcher? Either of you guys remember? My favorite story about Matt Morris was he got hurt near the end of one season, so he disappeared. He comes back the next season and he has this massive bushy beard, and I know he had shoulder surgery or something rather. So the joke amongst my friends and I was that he went off into the woods to have surgery with bears and other creatures. And then he was really good for like 6 or 7 months. So we started saying that all of these players just need to go have their Tommy John by a bear and that'll take care of it.
The bear essentials. Marco Estrada will be the next guy up on our list. He is number 8 He just pitched yesterday, I believe, but his ERA is a cool 4.98 with a 3.89 FIP for a difference of 1.09. So, Ron, do you have any faith in Marco Estrada?
A little bit. He started out really, really solid. I like the 10, the K per 9 over 10. I think he has the highest K per 9 on this list. Arrieta's, I think, around there somewhere, but I have a lot, little more confidence in him than the first two. He's one that I'd stash definitely if I could get a hold of him. I don't like that he's given up 30% hard contact. I don't like the 343 BABIP, which is seventh in the league. But I think he could figure it out a little bit. He's got a decent offense around him that can get it going. So he's a guy I would definitely buy low on, but it'd have to be a low bid or me giving up not very much to get him.
Yeah, I agree. I'll buy. Obviously, this list is going to have guys with high BABIP, and he certainly has that. I think his is at, I'm looking at a screen, I can't see it, 343. So I think you could shave 50 points off that pretty easily. He's also giving up too many home run per fly ball, but he does that in his career. And that's a little bit indicative of the way baseball is now. It just feels like there's more strikeouts and more home runs. So you're going to see an inflated K per nine, also an inflated home run rate. So I think the home run per nine comes down. I think the K per nine comes down, but it's also solid. Like his career is 8.24. So maybe it doesn't stay over 10, but maybe it stays over 9. So I'll buy in on him. He could be a really solid guy to get some innings if he stays healthy, and certainly could be worth, you know, a low bid or, you know, a quick flip of a lower level prospect if you need the innings.
I think, yeah, out of all these guys we're going to talk about, I'm probably buying on Estrada the most just because I really don't think that whoever owns him thinks that highly of him, where he's going to be untouchable. Like some of the bigger names, like a Jake Arrieta that we're going to talk about in a little bit here. You know, he's got such name value that whoever invested in him is going to be a lot more reticent to give him up. Whereas Marco Estrada's like, ah, he's sort of a back end guy, whatever. You know, like you said, Ben, the home run rate is up, but he has been good at keeping the ball in the park. Basically, 9% and 10% home run per fly ball the last couple of years, as opposed to 13% this year. But the big thing with him is that his pop-up rate has been cut in half. Last year, it was just a shade under 17% pop-up rate, and that's been something that he's consistently done throughout his career. And this year, it's just 8.3%. And so he's just not inducing pop-ups, and that's ended up, you know, instead of pop-ups, you've seen a lot more balls leave the yard, and that's going to lead to a drastically different ERA. So I do think that there'll be a few fewer long balls to choose words terribly, but yeah, you got to love the walks that are up. The walks are down. Strikeouts are up. So I think a lot better days are on the horizon for him, and I think you can get him pretty cheap right now. So I would be buying low on him. Rick Porcello, let's see where he is on the list. He's our next guy. Oh, he's right behind Marco Estrada, number 9 with a 0.90 ERA minus FIP. His ERA is 5.05. His FIP is 4.15. So, Van, are you buying low on Rick Porcello?
Well, my favorite thing about Rick Porcello is, of course, that I like to mispronounce his name as Porcello, because that just sounds like so much fun to say. Rick Porcello.
He was a favorite of Scout Pig.
He is. Rick Porcello and Scout Pick, they go hand in hand. That was actually one of his first drafts, was saying, hey, yeah, we need to take Porcello. He'll be really good, Tigers. And then he'll win a Cy Young with the Red Sox with a pretty mediocre season a few years later.
and now he's a sidekick.
Exactly.
Scout Pick and Porcello.
Pig and Porcello. No, I don't really want anything to do with Porcello. Not necessarily because I think he's really that bad, but because I think he won a Cy Young, so people are going to value him like a Cy Young. His numbers this year are more like what I would expect from him than last year's numbers. He does limit the walks. Strikeouts are up, but like I said, they're up across the board. But he's just not that good, and I just don't think he's worth the price you'll pay. If you can get him for really cheap, then sure, go for it. But again, I don't think the price you're going to pay for that guy is I think it's going to be closer to a 3 ERA guy that you're going to pay for than the 4.5 ERA guy that I think he is.
Yeah, overall, I think you said the right word to describe him. I think he's pretty mediocre. I don't want him anywhere. There are some things that I do like about him that I didn't realize that were as good as they were. The walk rate's fairly low, 4.3%. I like to see the strand rate a little higher. But overall, teams are hitting 313 against him, so that kind of gives me a little pause there. But I was never a big fan, even after the Cy Young season. I had him in one league where I picked him up during the Cy Young year for a buck, and I thought I was going to be slick in the offseason, and I traded him for another guy we're going to talk about, the last one on this list, Tanner Roark, and that ended up working out real well. So overall, I don't think I'm really interested in that. Like Van said, I think that he people value him a little higher than they should. And I definitely don't want to pay up. Like I said, I'd rather go try to land Marco Estrada for a little cheaper.
Yeah, definitely the name value is there a little bit more with the Porcello. And he's just getting hit really hard, 43% hard contact rate so far this year. It's really high, especially compared to he's about league average, 30% last year, 33% year before. But, you know, there's nothing else that has really changed in anything in his pitch mix. And, you know, strikeouts are actually up. Walks are up slightly, but you look at 2015, they're still lower than that, 1.75 this year, 1.99 back in 2015. And speaking of that year, you know, I owned Rick Porcello. The only other time besides now that I owned Rick Porcello was when the podcast league was an AL-only league, and I owned him in the first half back in 2015, where he posted a 5.90 ERA over 100.2 innings pitched. And then he just, at the drop of a hat almost, in the second half, as soon as I dropped him and somebody else picked him up, he posted a 3.53 ERA over 71 and a third innings. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him do that again. I think it's just a matter of location. You know, I don't know if it's anything mechanical necessarily, but I think it's something that he can work out and get better, even with the numbers as they are, for, you know, 4.15 FIP. This day and age, that's usable in mixed leagues. And he does at least pitch a ton of innings, so there's that if you're in a quality start league. So I would be buying low on the Porcello.
Why don't you tell the listeners what you, Nathan Dawkin, a Twins fan, traded away for Rick Porcello?
Do I have to?
It's your show. Technically, you don't have to.
I traded him for Aaron Judge. It was the best trade of all time. No. sadly, I was trying to get Rick Porcello, and this was early on in the season. I think it was late April, and you know he was getting blown up, and all his peripherals looked really good. So I'm like, I'm going to buy low on this guy, and my offers were rebuffed by Joe, who was in, not Joe Osachi, but other Joe in the dynasty, and then
Sockeye Joe,
Cotton Eye Joe, yeah. if it weren't for him, I'd have been married a long time ago, but. Then a couple weeks later, he offered me out of the blue. He would give me Rick Porcello straight up for Jose Berríos, who I absorbed about 50 innings of a 9 ERA with last year, and he was pitching well in the minors like he always does. And so I'm like, all right, well, history does not bode well for Jose Berríos, so I feel just fine taking a chance on Rick Porcello, who was a Cy Young last year and should at least be a number three so far this year. I don't know what I'm going to get from Berríos. So I traded them straight up, and yeah, it's been obviously ever since, it's, you know, the rest is history, as they say. Glorious, glorious stuff. Let's talk about Jake Arrieta, who I've never owned anywhere.
I haven't either. I wasn't that high on him coming into the big years, and then the price got too high for me.
So I had him in, I think in my 19 teamer, and I traded him away, and I actually got a pretty good deal. I can't remember. I was trying to think of that when I was putting this list together. I can't remember what I got for him, but it was pretty decent value, especially now with what he's doing this season.
So he's got a 4.64 ERA and a 4.08 FIP for a 0.56 ERA minus FIP, and that puts him at number 16 on this list. And I've once again, through my tears, I've lost track of who's going first. So somebody just chime in on Arrieta.
I'll do it because I think it's me back to back, and that's how I roll. He's way better than this, but he's not an ace anymore. I think of him as more like a 3.3 ERA guy at best with solid strikeout rates. Obviously, the BABIP's inflated, so there's correction to be had. This year, I don't necessarily know if he posts all that great of numbers. I think there's maybe a little something wrong with his workload the last couple of years, but I think next year I'm going to buy him because I think the price will be right where I want it to be. And if you're in a league that's out of it, where you're out of it and it's a keeper league, then sure, I'd be okay buying him. He's 31, so he's not young, but he's also not old. So I think maybe there's a couple years of value to be had here. So I don't know. This year I'm not that interested in, but for the career, sure, I think he could be a pretty serviceable pitcher.
Yeah, I think I buy him too. I'm afraid though that you're going to run into the same problem that you're going to run into with Rick Porcolo, is the fact that you're going to have to pay a little more for the name and the Cy Young than you would for some of the other guys on this list. But when you look at what he's got on the board, I mean, the batting average against is .256. It's one of the lowest BABIPs in the group. The walk rate's a little higher than I'd like to see, but overall, I think that if you can get him for the right price, or it might be, like Vance said, it might not be a bad idea to wait out the season and see what you can get for him in the offseason or in the draft next year. But I think he's a guy that I'd definitely buy low on, but it just all depends on who the owner is and what the cost is.
I just don't think that whoever has him is going to be giving him up for cheap. It's tough to draft a guy like that early and then just take a loss on him, you know, trading him straight up for, oh God, I don't know. Whoever's been, or Irvin Santana, you know, I don't know. And it'll be interesting to see next year too, because this is his contract year, Van, and you know, who knows where he eventually ends up next year. And this is going to be a very interesting second half, because if he carries on like this, I wonder what sort of contract he will get. Maybe he just signs a 1-year deal somewhere to try and prove that he's better than this. But yeah, 408 FIP, not the end of the world. But I think that we're looking pretty much at a number three at this point. His velocity is down just pretty much two ticks. And he's really struggled against lefties this year. This is the same issue that Matt Moore has actually dealt with. But 278 WOBA against left-handed hitters last year for Jake Arrieta. This year is almost 100 points higher at 375. And so I was trying to figure out what the hell is going on there. And he is using his slider less against lefties. He's using his changeup and his curve more, which you would think that would make sense and it would portend better results, but he's been markedly worse. So he has allegedly made a mechanical change earlier in the season, but he still stinks. So as far as I can tell, it's just the velocity drop has really impacted his stuff. And I'm not really sure if he bounces back this year. So given his acquisition cost and what I'm seeing from him so far, I think I'm just leaving him lie wherever he's at.
Just in some Cubs-colored pile that he's lying in, sure.
Amongst the tattered shreds of uniforms that Chris Sale has tossed aside.
Yeah. It's in the same state, so sure. Or city, I mean.
Yep. Tanner O'Rourke is the last guy that we're going to touch on here before we move on. He is number 17 on this list, with an ERA minus FIP of 0.56. So far, his ERA is 4.88, and his FIP is 4.32. So, Ron, are you buying low on the Tanner O'Rourke?
No, I'm not. He's the guy that burned me in a lot of places. Like I said, I traded Rick Porcolo for him, thinking I was going to be slick, and it backfired. He's too inconsistent. He's averaging 3 walks per start. The K percent's down from last year. And so I guess it's a matter of I was chasing last year's numbers, and that hasn't worked out. I mean, he's had a couple of good starts where you think that he's going to get back to that form, and then he has 2 or 3 blowups in a row. So I'm not really interested anywhere. He's a guy that I think is on a lot of waiver wires. So if you are looking at him and want to try to add him, I don't think it's going to cost you much. He does have going for him that he does have an awesome offense behind him, but I'm staying away. I want nothing to do with him.
I agree. Yeah. Based on his pitching profile, I never really understood his success to the degree that he had it in the past. I doubt it continues to be as bad as it is, but I'm also not confident in him at all. Really doesn't strike anyone out. He walks more than someone who doesn't strike people out like him should. It's just not really a guy that I think you should really be resting your laurels on. There's probably someone better. Again, Marco Estrada, who's obviously going to cost more, but is going to provide you at least strikeouts, if nothing else. So it's just not enough that Tanner Roark brings to the party for me to want to be involved with him anymore.
I would buy very, very low. I've never been a Roark guy necessarily. And there's actually a quote here that he has been fiddling with his mechanics all year, and it's just something that is amiss in his delivery. He's just trying to get himself figured out. So I do think that he can be better than this, you know, 4.88 ERA. But, I mean, last year you got a guy who posted a 2.83 ERA, but his FIP was almost a full run higher than that last year at 3.79. And so that's why, you know, I didn't grab him anywhere this year. I'm like, there's a ton of regression coming with this guy, but now it's gone. The pendulum has swung completely in the other direction, and now there's positive correction coming his way. And he's, you know, for what it's worth, he's still limiting hard contact, slightly below league average, 29%. So there's that. But like you guys said, not a ton of strikeouts. He will give you plenty of wins pitching for the Nationals, and he usually does pitch pretty deep into games. So there is that as far as quality starts go and wins go. So that will, you know, keep his value somewhat up. And I do think that he can get better, but I wouldn't be buying on him necessarily unless he's really cheap. But with that, you know, if you want to reach out to us on Twitter, if there's any other pitchers out there, we're always ready to talk about these guys. If there's somebody on this list that you want to look up to yourself, you want to get our opinion on, feel free to reach out on Twitter. But with that, we're going to move on to the closer for the week, boys. And Van, we may as well start off with you because we're going to talk about your Angels. What the hell's going on over there? We lost Bud Norris, who's just that destroyed me, man. I picked him up all over the place, and he had been so good. It had just been such a huge net positive for like all of my teams this year, and now he's on the disabled list. So who's got the saves in LA right now?
Well, it should be Bedrosian, but it's not going to be. I really think it's going to be David Hernandez for a while, whom you picked up for $3 in the Dynasty
League,
which is a good thing to do. I didn't realize he was out there. Otherwise, I would have picked him up and gotten more than my zero saves this season. But yeah, I have no idea. Like I said, Bedrosian's the best pitcher of the bunch. However, Scioscia doesn't always like the best player of the bunch. He likes the gritty, old-fashioned guys, and I guess Bedrosian isn't that. And he's got a little bit of an injury history, so I do understand that. What I really think is going to happen for the rest of the year is that when Norris comes back, he's going to get that job back, and he's going to hold it because he's a pretty good pitcher out of the bullpen. If the Angels are out of it, they'll sell Norris, and then they'll punch, I think, Bedrosian in the job there. If the Angels are still in it, they're going to hang on to him and see what they can do. So that's kind of how that's going to go. I don't think David Hernandez really gets a lot of saves for the rest of the season because I think either Norris gets the job back when he comes back and is healthy, or Bedrosian eventually usurps the role and takes it back. But really, I think they're going to try and get some value out of Norris at the trade deadline if they can. So the best way to do that is to let him rack up saves if and when he's healthy.
Yeah, that's essentially almost a carbon copy of what I had. I think that Norris gets a job back when he comes back because he was really good. 11 out of 13 saves and only two blown saves, so that's a pretty solid 2.43 ERA. Long term, though, I think I'd rather have Cam Bedrosian for the season and beyond. I don't think David Hernandez is going to be in there very long, but Bud Norris, I think it's like I said, gets a job back when he comes back. Van, let me ask you this: as an Angels fan, how does Mike Scioscia still have a job?
Because he signed a huge contract. That's all it is. There was a couple years ago, there was talk of him even, opting out of his deal. Obviously, he wasn't going to do that because he was one of the highest paid managers in the game. And then I think it was last year, there was talk of them just dismissing him and eating him the last couple of years. And they'd ultimately decided.
That's interesting.
And he's a big fella, so that's a lot to
and
eat.
And he won them a World Series, too. That's a little harsh.
Yeah, just a little harsh to eat him. Maybe just, you know, nibble a little bit.
All right.
I don't think he has the job for much longer. I think obviously them having success when they weren't expected to this year bodes well for him, even though I really don't think it's his job. I think he really ruined the thing with now Mariners GM. I'm blanking on his name. But anyway, he was the Angels GM for a few years, and Jerry DePoto, and they butted heads nonstop. And DePoto never got his way. And guess what? The team has one of the worst minor league systems in the game. They're struggling without the without Mike Trout, that team is really nothing. So I really like DePoto, and I was sad to see him go to the Mariners, and I think he's doing good stuff up there. And I think Scioscia is the main reason behind that. So I don't think he has a job for too much longer with the Angels.
Neither one of you guys even mentioned Houston Street. Good heavens.
Yeah, no, he got hurt again in the minors, and he's bad. And, yeah, I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Yeah, I don't either. But I just thought we would bring his name up. Actually, the latest update says that he's supposed to be back this week. So,
Huston?
Yeah, good old Huston. But yeah, I like you said, Van, I picked up Hernandez in, I think, three different leagues just because he was free. And, so I think it's going to be a very fluid situation for the next week or two until Bud Norris comes back. And then I do think that he does close again. I don't know why they didn't just save Bedrosian for the ninth inning the other night. Instead, it seemed like they were lining up Hernandez. So, if I was going to take a chance on anybody besides Bedrosian, it would definitely be Hernandez. And this Kenyon Middleton guy, I don't know. He walks too many guys, but he is an interesting name to keep an eye on in that bullpen.
Yeah, well, for what that's worth, I don't think Shosh will even use. He'll be a sixth inning guy. You'll use him every 8 days until he eventually gets lit up because he's not getting regular work, and then they send him back to the minors.
Brilliant. all right, well, let's go to you then on this one, Ron. We're going to move down to Texas, where Matt Busch has not been great with the Rangers. So who would you be handcuffing him with, and what level of confidence do you have in the Busch?
Well, real quick, I'm sitting here trying to think of which one of my team names I'm going to choose. I'm going to pick to change the name to Huston Porcello. So I've got to figure that out before we get done here. I don't like anything in the Rangers bullpen that's even remotely in the running for the saves. And when you look across the board, Matt Busch has been shaky. He's got a few blown saves and 11 tries. Jeremy Jeffries would be the guy, but the ERA is over 5. 14 walks and 29.2. It seems like every guy in that bullpen walks a lot of guys. And so I think it's a case of, you know, another one that I picked up in a few leagues that I was a fan of, Jose Leclerc. He's got 11 walks in 19 innings. Other than that, the numbers look decent there. Keon Keela's numbers look decent beyond the walks. The ERA is not real high. His ERA is over 3, but his WHIP is under 1. I thought that was kind of interesting. I think they're going to be a team, if they think they are in it at all, that they're going to be calling some teams, and they're going to have to bring somebody in, because what they've got to choose from, there's not one clear-cut guy, I think, that's going to take over that job, and there's not a lot to like about that bullpen overall.
Well, I agree there's not really one clear-cut guy for it. I don't know. I kind of like some of these guys, and in fact, Leclerc is the guy that I'm tabbing to eventually get the job. I think the Rangers have shown over the last several years with Dyson and the other guy before that, I can't even think of his name, that they're ready to pull the trigger with closers. They will, after a couple of blown saves, they just move on. And I think Busch is going to lose the job soon. And I also think the Rangers took quite a hit from the being a decent human being perspective by being so high on Busch that they're going to stay a little bit further away from Keon Aquila, just because we know he's had some off the field issues, which is another reason why I think Leclerc gets a little bit of a benefit to it. And right now Leclerc's striking out 16.11 per nine, which is absurd. And one of those things that guys, when they see their elite closers, that's what you want to see. Now the 5.21 walks per nine is very bad, but if he can temper some walks and still strike out guys at a, you know, 12% rate, then heck, that's going to be a pretty good closer. And he's also the guy that FIP likes the most at 197. So I think there's some value to be had. Maybe they go outside of the organization, but we all know they're not going to catch the Astros. And if they're just fighting for a wild card spot, maybe they're less likely to, you know, really pony up for a closer.
Giddy up. Yeah. I kind of hope it's Leclerc, because it's just fun to say Leclerc, which, you know, I think.
So he'd be a Liquit.
Liquid, yes. And when Scout Pig found him, I think he called him Le Pork back in return. Yeah, you know, Leclerc, definitely the strikeouts are sexy, the walk rate less so. I'm hedging my bets with Keon Nikela, even though he's a dickwad, but no more so than Matt Busch, obviously. So you have to set personalities aside in this fantastic game of ours. So I'm going to go with Kayla for now. He's definitely in the upper tier of my handcuffs at this point. And we're just going to touch fairly briefly on this next bullpen, but I just thought it was really interesting. So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on this, but over in Cleveland, all of a sudden we've got Andrew Miller. Actually, he's on the mound right now in the bottom of the seventh, but over the last, yeah, he's putting out a fire, it looks like, right now. He's got the bases juiced with two out. And swing and miss. Gets out of it. Mm-hmm. What a guy. But anyway, before today, he had pitched the ninth inning a couple times because Cody Allen had said that he is willing to step out of the closer's role just to manage Andrew Miller's workload. So, I mean, you guys assess what the hell. That never happens.
That's really fascinating. Yeah, no, that never happens. Cody Allen himself gave up that idea. Ultimately, though, Allen's been succeeding. He hasn't been bad this year. So I think that it's more of a temporary thing. So I would say Allen's still long-term the closer, because they also do really value Andrew Miller's basically pitching at their high-stress spots, like now in the seventh inning with the bases loaded. That's a really good time to get Miller in there, because he's probably your best pitcher in the bullpen. However, Allen is also a really good pitcher, so I'm fine with whatever they decide to do. I just think ultimately Allen ends up with more saves than Miller the rest of the way.
Well, first of all, I looked up Kilo and Kila, and it's actually Hawaiian for dickwad. So I didn't know if you guys knew that. So my thing is with this, I like Nate said, I don't know that I've ever heard of something like this taking place. But to me, it's hard to believe that if, you know, Miller hasn't, if he comes in and he's the closer and he's dominant, are they really going to pull him from that role and put Cody Allen back there? Because Cody Allen's been solid, but he's not what I would call a dominant closer. The whip's kind of high at 1.34. But what do you guys think about that? If Miller gets in there and he's lights out in the ninth inning, do they make the move back to Allen?
I don't think so, just because we're talking about Terry Francona and the Indians, who are a really progressive team. They know that the ninth inning is not the most important inning. So, again, to further my point earlier, Miller's their best pitcher. They'll use him when they need him the most. And that may not be the ninth. I think the ninth will still belong to Allen. But it has. If this were any other team, almost any other team, if this were the Angels, I'd be like, no, it's clearly Miller. He's going to be the closer. But because of the progressive ideas of that team, I could see them still sticking with Allen for sure.
Yeah, it seems like a really unique situation where it's a couple bullpen guys that seem to really respect each other, and like you said, Van, with a really progressive manager in Francona. I don't see, I think this will be a pretty fluid situation moving forward. If they really are looking to manage Miller's workload, then maybe it's something that we see continue. I think that he will get a few more saves down the stretch than I would have certainly expected before this recent development. So it's not like both of these guys weren't owned in pretty much all leagues. Andrew Miller was, because he's just such an elite reliever that even if he's not getting you saves, he's still worthwhile to own. Definitely expect saves, I would say, from both of these guys pretty much intermittently for the rest of the season. But that's going to do it for closers for right now. So let's move on to some prospects. And we're going to start off with Ron over here. We got Mike Soroka. You going to start off? Tell us a little bit about him.
Sure. And when I wrote the article this week, I kind of strayed from what I've been doing in the past. And I went with a couple of prospects that are guys that I'm really high on, that I'm trying to, that I have in a couple dynasties, and when another one I'm trying to get, Soroka especially. But we've talked about the Braves farm system a couple times and how stocked it is, and you can go down the list of the arms that they have that have a ton of potential. And one of the ones that I like is kind of, that's a little bit further down the list, is Soroka. Right now he's at AA, and I don't know. He's only 19. He's one of the youngest players at AA, but he's lights out there. And I don't know if we're going to see him at the major league level, but he's one of these that I think that if he keeps throwing a ball the way he is, it's going to be hard for them to not give him a few starts outside of a September call-up, depending on where they're at. Now, if they're out of it, they may not need to bring him up. And only being 19, with the depth that they have, they may not need to rush him. But when you look at what he's doing, 76 innings, 2.23 ERA, 0.94 whip, 69 strikeouts. So he's not a huge power strikeout guy, but he does go after guys. He's got three pitches that he gets outs with. Obviously the fastball sits in the low 90s, so it's not overpowering, but he moves it around a little bit. It's got some sinking action on it. Solid changeup, solid curve that he can throw for strikes as well. 17.4% K to walk ratio. So overall, there's a lot to like about him. And the walk rate is pretty low at 5.3. So overall, he's a guy that I like. He's a guy that you need to get in dynasties now if he's out there. If you have the ones like I have, where we have just a minor league roster of 15 guys, he's one that you need to add. If you can trade something for him, go get him, because I think he's going to be a nice addition to their rotation at some point. But like I said, you may not see him this year. I'm hoping that we do, because I'd like to see what he does. But the commonality between the two guys that I picked this week as well is they're going to get really helped out if there's a trade of some sort. So maybe if they decide to move a piece in their rotation, maybe R.A. Dickey, maybe Jaime Garcia. I'm not really sure what they're going to do, but it could clear the path for him as well. So we'll see. I think I'm more optimistic with him than anything else with Soroka.
He also goes great on Chinese food or burgers. You can put him on anything. He's just great with the little green top and the red bottle. Yeah.
And they make those cool t-shirts with the rooster too.
I have one of those t-shirts, yeah. And I have, there you go. See? I've got like a half dozen bottles of Sriracha. Big, big fan.
Good stuff.
It is good stuff.
Fantastic.
You can make your own too, people out there. It's not that difficult.
Really? Oh,
yeah. You just bury it in the yard for a while. It's basically fermented stuff. So, yeah.
Fermented. I've got a lot of stuff. I've just this whole time I've been just waiting for it to ferment in my kitchen. I didn't know I had to bury it in the backyard.
This is Van's cooking class. Yeah, just get a jar, put a bunch of stuff in it, bury it in the backyard. Sriracha. That's how it works. The bottle will even change color. Chickens will show up in your yard. It's great.
Magic.
Fantastic.
Sorcery. Sorcery even.
This whole time I had no idea. Yeah, I'm pretty pessimistic that we see Soroka myself. Like you said, just 19 years old, not on the 40 man, so I think he's a ways away yet. But Carson Kelly, perhaps he's a little bit closer?
He is, but he's, like I alluded to before, he needs a trade. He's behind a guy that's pretty good that just signed an extension until 2020, and that's Yadi Molina of the Flying Molina Brothers. So I don't know if you're gonna see him up because he's, as I said in the article, when you mention guys that are position changes, you usually see guys that are moved away from catcher. He was drafted as a third baseman, and they've kind of groomed him into a catcher. And overall, with the combination of the glove that he has, the bat that's coming around, he's on a lot of lists, the top catching prospect in the game. So I don't know where they're going to be able to put him. And if they don't want to move him away from there, because like I said, Molina's not going anywhere. The defense is there from everything I've read, interviews I've seen with him. He's working his tail off to become a great catcher, and he's doing it. He's making it happen. The offense numbers are there. The things that we like as far as a fantasy perspective are solid from a catcher. He's slashing .295, .387, .474 with 7 bombs, 28 RBIs. .381 WOBA, so a lot to like there offensively. He's not just a defensive guy that's going to stick because of his defense. He's going to be able to hit the ball as well. But I wonder if he's a guy that, you know, if the Cardinals are, they feel like they can make a run, they feel like they're still in it, do they move him to get an arm? Do they move him to get another bat in the lineup? Because he's going to be the one that I think is going to be in that farm system that's by far going to bring them the most, because there's not a lot of stellar catching prospects out there. We talked about Jorge Alfaro a couple weeks ago. Those are kind of the top two as far as from a fantasy standpoint, I think. You probably put Christian Betancourt in there as well. But other than that, I don't really think that – I don't know if you're going to see him or not, because I don't know where they're going to put him. And if he's a backup and he gets maybe a start or two per week when they bring him up, is he really going to help your fantasy team that much? So another guy in Dynasty to add if you can. But overall, I don't really know if he's a guy that you're going to see a lot from this year, unless there is a trade that happens and they send him somewhere else where he's got a clearer path to get playing time. But overall, a guy that I really like, a guy that's one of my favorite prospects in the minors right now.
And he was great when he hosted, not TMZ, but Total
TRL.
Request Live. There
TRL,
you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Grew up watching that crap.
Yeah. Oh, that explains it. Sure.
Yeah, I know it explains a lot of brain damage. and then a couple deeper guys that I will touch on just a little bit before we move on is what I'm going to talk about, Sixto Sanchez on the pitching side. He is just 18 years old. He's a little bit of a smaller guy, 6'1", 185. He's in the Phillies organization. You know, that seeing a frame like that immediately puts him at risk of even being a full season starter for me. But he has worked around a neck injury this year to post a .288 ERA over 34 and a third innings pitched at Single A Lakewood, the Blue Claws, and 32 strikeouts and just 3 walks in those 34 and a third innings. So very, very good. Hasn't allowed a home run. He's got a mid-90s fastball that can touch 100, so very, very exciting. He can command the pitch as well. But breaking balls as a whole are still a work in progress, but the results are impressive for his age relative to the level. So if he can develop some off-speed offerings, then he could be a number two starting pitcher. If not, he might be more of a back-end guy. But
Brent, and he's none the richer, too.
Sixto none the richer.
Yes.
Nice. You better put that. You write that down somewhere until he makes the majors.
The worst part is I have nothing for your next guy. I've had my name based joke on these first three, and they all came up, but I have nothing for the next one. So I'm going to disappoint everyone now, as opposed to later after you talk about him. Though you did call him Brandon earlier in the podcast. Yeah.
That was just a slip of the tongue, which I give to the wife every now and then.
But I'm.
Yeah. Well, I hate his name because I never know whether to spell it with a D, G, or just a G for people that are named Roger or Rogers.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
God, it drives me freaking nuts. So Brendan Rodgers, R-O-D-G-E-R-S, he was finally promoted to Double A, the Hartford Yard Goats. Thank you very much. From the from the Single A Lancaster Jethawks. Following the California League All-Star Game, he hit a paltry 400/419/700 with 12 home runs over a pleasantly symmetrical 222 plate appearances, so not bad. Struck out just 14% of the time, but only walked 2.7%. Of course, most people will remember him. He was the third overall pick back in 2015, which was not that long ago. But the hangar, as it's called, is a real launching pad in Lancaster there. But still, the numbers are impressive even for that being taken into consideration. You'd like to see him walk a little bit more, but you know, when you're hitting 400, there's not a lot to argue about. So he remains an elite prospect that should hit for power and average in Colorado, which is extremely valuable even if he doesn't walk much. So if you're rebuilding, he would definitely be one to have on your team, which, Van, you do own him, do you not?
I do. He was the third overall pick in that draft and the first overall pick in the Dynasty Baseball League first-year player draft by me, Butu Inc. Although at the time, I think my team was named John Cena.
Yeah. Why was that?
I was drunk one night, and I was it was Vicious and Delicious for several years. I'm like, I'm going to go with a team name change. What can I name it? And then somebody, I don't know. I have no idea how it happened, but it just became John Cena. Maybe it was to intimidate my opponents.
Yes, he's very intimidating, that's for sure.
Wasn't he picked in that draft behind, wasn't that Dansby Swanson and Bregman before him? Didn't they all come out of that draft that same year?
Yes, Swanson was, he was overall number one. That's right, because he went to Arizona. Bregman, that's absolutely correct. That was the 1-2-3. And man, that's a pretty good 1-2-3.
Yeah, pretty solid.
Yeah, it's not every year that you see those guys come up fairly quickly and all succeed by any means. Think of, man, I was reminded again on Twitter recently of just imagine if the Astros had taken Chris Bryant instead of Mark Appel.
Oh, man.
And
wow.
And if they had not let J.D. Martinez go.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Oh, my God. So they're kicking themselves. But, they're doing just fine right now. So I think they'll be all right. So let's move on to some weekend streaming, boys. Van, why don't you start us off? Who you got for us?
I have a couple names for you here, as most people do when you give streaming. You don't just hint at them. You give them their names. So first off, I'm going to go with on Friday night, Mike Foltynewicz, who's quite a handful of a name, against the Brewers. Folty has showed some flashes of brilliance this year. The Brewers do strike out a lot. On paper, it's a matchup you might want to avoid because the Brewers do have a pretty good offense, but I like it. I think Foltynewicz is good fastball. Will really kind of tangle them up. I think he'll get good strikeouts. And really, in his starts, he only gets lit up or dominates. So I'm expecting one of the latter here. So I like Foltynewicz career-wise because I think he's really shown some good steps this year. And I think he's going to be a pretty good streaming option this week. Less exciting is on Saturday, I have James Shields. He's back, and he's going to get to face the A's, although it's in Chicago and not Oakland. His first game back against Toronto, he's knocked around a bit, but I think the rust is going to be knocked off, and you can expect a decent start on the day. He's still had a pretty good season overall in his limited innings, and I think there's some value to be had. And then finally on Sunday, Derek Holland. Not only does Derek Holland look like Kylo Ren from the new Star Wars, he also pitches for the White Sox against the A's this Sunday. He's been hit pretty hard in the last three of his last four starts, but he was a pretty nice surprise before that. I think this is a pretty good game to get back on track, and it becomes a solid streaming option again. So those are my three guys. Last week, I gave you three names. Two of them were really good. One of them not so much. So maybe you'll strike gold with two of these three names as well.
Yeah, that last start Derek Holland had, he started the game with a mustache, and then when I think it was Kenny Vargas hit a home run so hard that when he turned his head around to watch it leave, the mustache just flew right off his head.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Let me ask you this, by the way, as a Twins fan who gets to watch the Twins a lot, what do you think of that guy? Because I've seen people get mad when he gets sent down.
Yeah, he's not that good. I've honestly never been into him. Everybody, we were just talking about this on a break, where it seems like as soon as the Twins let a lot of these guys go, they sort of they get better. Carlos Gomez, who else were we talking about? Aaron Hicks.
Aaron Hicks, yeah.
The list never ends, it seems like, and so all the Twins fans are kind of clamoring for more playing time, and perhaps that happens now that it seems all but like a foregone conclusion that they will have a pretty miserable second half as their lack of pitching is finally catching up to them a little bit. But I just don't see it with Vargas. You know, he's a huge guy, so you'd think that he would have more power, but he just doesn't have a ton of contact. And really, for as big a guy, he doesn't have that much power. His play discipline is just really bad. He has a lot of ugly strikeouts, and I'm pretty sure his contract is just about up. He's not going to have any more options left if he even has one. Yeah, he has to have one this year. He's been down in the minors, so I'm out on him. If he walks and he catches on somewhere else and somehow is a decent switch hitting, you know, power guy, then so be it. But I just haven't seen it so far.
Well, he's another guy that I saw play down here in Class A, and even in Class A, he wasn't that impressive. It seemed like his at bats had like a handful of outcomes. It would either be a home run, he would rope a like 390-foot single off the top of the wall because he couldn't stretch it to a double, or he would strike out. That was about it. So he wasn't really that impressive when he was down here either.
You don't have an autographed Kenneth Vargas baseball, do you?
I actually do, and I can send you a picture to prove it.
No, I don't believe it. I expect that picture because I do not believe that one bit. Now, the joke I was going to make, Nate, is that you said that he's a really big guy. Well, you know why he's so big is because according to his name, he's two people.
That's true.
That is a lot of Kennys.
That reminds. That's the joke I used to make with when Williams Perez was a shitty pitcher for a couple days.
Brooks Robinson.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Kendrys Morales. Well, I guess it's not quite the same. There's a lot of them.
All right.
Max's Scherzer.
You know that he's two people because he's got two different freaking colored eyes.
Yes.
That's true. So he's some sort of demon who's been trapped in a human's body and told to throw baseballs.
He's really good at it, too. All right. Who you got for us over there, Ron?
All right. Friday, I got you, Seth Lugo. The only thing that gives me a little bit of reservation is the Mets offense is iffy, but they are going. He is going against the Giants. They're hitting .238 against righties, and the opposing pitcher is our guy Ty Belch. So I like that as well. Saturday, I've actually got two Saturday, and one is kind of serious, and one is not. I just like his name. For Texas, you have Austin Bebens Dirks,
who's a robot. I mean, come on.
The thing I like about his name is the Dirks, instead of having a KS, has a KX, which I thought was pretty amazing. And it sounds to me like when you say his name, it's like a real name of a superhero. You know, like Batman is Bruce Wayne. To me, it sounds like he's like an X-Men character. Then that's his real name that they just kind of made up. So you can start him because he has a cool name. The guy I looked at again on Saturday too, Homer Bailey is coming out of nowhere to make a return to the majors. He is starting against the Nats, so that could either – it's going to go one of two ways. It's either going to be solid or he's going to just get blown up. But he's only 3% owned. He's been really good in rehab, 1.08 ERA in the three starts, 17 Ks to three walks. So he's somebody that will definitely be out there. Sunday, I'm taking Mike Montgomery. Got the Cubs offense behind him. And he's 27% owned, so he's going to be out there in a quarter of your leagues. But he's 2.76 ERA in his road starts. I believe he's starting against the Marlins. So overall, I think he's the guy I'm going with on Sunday.
You stole Seth Lugo from me, Ron. And then I also mentioned that if you don't like him, then you could go with Ty Black or Belch in the same game because the Mets are pretty bad against lefties. So whichever way you want to go with that one, I'm fine with. And then the only other name that I came up with was Francisco Liriano, if you're feeling lucky. He is at Kansas City on Sunday. And Kansas City sucks. So there you go.
Except for Mike Moustakas and his 500 home runs this year or whatever.
Right. But I guess he is hitting lefties nowadays. So
somehow.
So he's been doing that.
There's never been a human who looks less like a baseball player than Mike Moustakas. That guy, and I've been to plenty of Royals games where I've seen him in person. He just looks like gravy that's just been poured out into the shape of a human.
Well, I mean, to help him out a little bit, there's Devin Mesoraco, who's literally a walking corpse.
Yeah, that's true. With the dopey eyes. He looks like he stole Aaron Harang's eyes. That's what it looks like.
Aaron Harang might be the ugliest human being alive. Like,
you know what? Well,
They call him the orangutan for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. No, my favorite start in history was Harang versus Matt Garza, and I dubbed it the orangutan versus the Garzantula.
Nice. That is a major motion picture right there.
It's been financed by the money bought after Scout Pigs movie.
Right. Yeah. Can't believe that Universal Studios turned us down for Scout Pig, the script, by the way.
That's all right. We'll get in touch with other production studio company. I don't know any of them.
We should meet with Netflix. They're popping out some good stuff these days.
Hulu, sure.
Hulu. All right, boys, that's all we got for this week. Ron, what do you have going on down the stretch?
Well, real quick, I wanted to correct myself. I mentioned when I was talking about catcher prospects, I mentioned Christian Betancourt. And for some reason, I mentioned him, but I was thinking of Francisco Mejia for the Indians, another guy that's out there that's top of the list. Catch me, big guy, Fantasy Sports. I want to have the on-deck circle again next week. We're going to be obviously digging a little deeper for some further down prospects in the weeks to come. And then I'll be on Fantistics. I don't think I have Fantistics for a little while, though, but I hope when I'm on there next time, you mentioned Francisco Liriano. I'm hoping that my daily picks are going to be a little bit better than they were last week, because they were kind of I kind of struck out a little bit. I did really well the week before, and then last week Liriano kind of ended that for me. But yeah, that's where I'll be at. So catch me there.
What about you, Van?
I don't have a whole lot going on. You'll see my Holder Fold thing coming out tomorrow, which will discuss Aaron Hicks, among other players. The Backup Catcher podcast has been on hiatus because my partner, Brian Vaughn, has decided he doesn't like to do anything aside from complain loudly about baseball. So eventually, once I can get time...
Isn't that what the podcast was anyway?
It was, but he's just not doing it in a public forum now, which is disappointing to me, of course, because I have some great ideas for some new drops and garbage talk. So hopefully we'll have another one of those coming up soon. You and I have discussed doing the Game of Thrones thing in the Man Cave section of Big Guy Fantasy Sports, so check us out there. Again, you can find me on Twitter at Manly Van Lee, or on Facebook under the name Van Lee, as you might have guessed. And I'm always making stupid jokes and making fun of Ron now, which I find enjoyable.
And I enjoy it as well.
Well, good.
Yes. Always a good time.
Send me that picture of that ball, because I still don't believe you.
Whoa. Yeah.
Done.
Phrasing.
And I'll send you a picture of the Kenny's Vargas autograph too. Oh.
Hey. Oh.
No.
But I'm.
Yeah. I mean, you always, you know, you mentioned it with the Fantastics DFS calls. I haven't looked up all of mine, but I did see that Jed Jerko hit a dong today, which was a recommendation. And Tommy Pham, who I talked about, I just wrote up last night as well, with a double dong day. So
love Tommy Pham.
Yeah.
Fantastic
indeed. Yeah, I guess I didn't look up his ownership percentage, but whatever it is, it should be higher, because
it's not as high as you think it is, because I actually added him in one of my leagues last night, and it's not as high as you would think it would be.
Yeah, I actually traded for him in the listeners league, the podcast league, as a throw in with when I was getting Trey Turner, because I need some trades. I sent out Target Supreme Matt Carpenter, which hurt my feelings, but I needed the speed, and I believe I picked up, I mean, Trey Turner's probably stolen a dozen bases since I picked him up, so that's definitely worked out for me so far, because that's where I had the most standings points to gain. But anyway, yeah, this is, I believe, the last week that you will be able to hear me on Sirius XM on Sunday mornings, on the Fantastics Insider Baseball Radio Show, before they switch to football. I believe they do that when the calendar flips to July. So you can check me out there.
I'm canceling my subscription Monday then.
Oh, I know, right?
No reason.
Terrible. It's so early to move to football, but
yeah, too early.
Yeah, well, that's most people like the football, you know, a much bigger audience, so it's the way it goes. But I will still be writing for Fantastics for the rest of the season. Of course, Fire and Ice articles hit every Friday, typically, sometimes Saturday, at Big Guy Fantasy Sports. And listen to the other podcasts if you are one of those types that also dabbles in the football. Look forward to the Consistency Cast. Of course, that's Bob Long and Nate Miller. They're going to be churning out plenty of content coming up. And as I said at the top of the show, check out the Fantasy Football Consistency Guide as well, which I believe is going to be out this weekend. So until next week, folks, may the fantasy gods.